Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns back here on the Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, and we're joined by the editor-publisher once again of Buzz Flash, Mark Carlin, talking to us from the middle of the country in Chicago. At the quarter hour, we're going to dig deep into what's happening with the atomic power industry, and believe me, it ain't pretty, but it ain't pretty either what we're going to talk about with Mark here, the Trump virus. It really needs to be called the Trump virus, not the coronavirus or whatever else we got. Mark, you have a devastating piece on BuzzFlash about Donald Trump's role in this horrendous catastrophe that's destroying our nation. Why don't you tell us about it?
Essentially, BuzzFlash disagrees with the way the D.C. press corps handles Trump. First of all, they regard him as a legitimate president. They defer to him. They take him seriously. They follow whatever narrative he peddles. It's now, quote unquote, reopen the economy. But in reality, and the Washington Post had a piece about this last week, he appears to have deliberately let the coronavirus run wild. He called it, according to the Washington Post, in a meeting with Anthony Fauci and some others, that he wanted to let the virus wash over America and, in essence, let the fittest survive. Of course, it also is beneficial to Trump because, from his perspective, it is disproportionately killing blacks, older people who are on Social Security, so it relieves the government of a debt burden. It's killing prisoners who are going to die by the thousands. We have 2.5 million prisoners in the United States. And he has done very little, if anything, to reduce the virus. Eric Bollert, who is a media critic, said he is actively and purposefully making everything worse. And Bollert takes to task the D.C. press corps for allowing him to now, in what I call the Daily Trump Show, it's a propaganda vehicle, and it's really become a way he can divert attention from his intention to allow the coronavirus to spread and rage across the United States. I mean, he constantly is bragging that America is number one. Well, right now, we have 668,000 confirmed infections. Now, Zeke Emanuel, who's a epidemiological consultant on MSNBC, he says that the infections are probably 10 times the confirmed infections because of the shortage and this has been an intentional shortage on Trump's part. He keeps saying anyone can get tested who wants, but anyone who knows people who have tried to be tested in any populous area of the country, and even in some rural areas, you can't be tested basically unless you're going to be admitted to a hospital. And the number of tests has actually been decreasing, not increasing. So when we say, or Johns Hopkins says, there are 668,000 confirmed infections, these are people who have been tested. That's the only way you can confirm it. And we may actually have 10 times the number than Trump's notion of trying to force people back to work is ludicrous. We, of course, also have now it's over 34,000 deaths and climbing. So what I wrote in the article you're referring to, the commentary, also has in an interesting piece from the New Yorker about a guy, a Silicon Valley CEO, who kind of got together with some of his friends and said, you know, what can we do? Let's call the White House. Let's call Jared Kushner and see what we can do to get personal protective equipment to the frontline heroes and heroines, of which thousands and thousands, I think it's 10,000, have been infected of healthcare workers, and I think 29 have died. And so he started talking to the White House, to Kushner and others, and nothing happened. I mean, they would keep, he and his buddies in Silicon Valley, would keep trying to arrange deals to ship in protective equipment and so forth. And what he told the New Yorker was that he finally realized that this was government failure by design, that it was willful and intentional, not a problem to be fixed, and I'm quoting the New Yorker, but a policy choice by Trump that either would not or could not be undone. No one can believe it. That's the number one problem with the whole situation. The facts are known, but they are inconceivable. So we are just in denial. And
why aren't the Democrats demanding equal time? You know, Trump comes on every day and nobody answers him. You know, what's going on here with Democrats? These are like State of the Union addresses, and there should be and I'm sure the networks would go for it. There should be someone come on immediately after him every day to counteract the lies that he's telling. And I want to point out, by the way, also, I want to thank you, Mark. I'm Mark Buzzflash features my piece on Wisconsin. It's a tremendous breakthrough in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin voters withstood the attempts by the Republican legislature and the U.S. Supreme Court to crush that election. They put a challenger onto the U.S. Supreme Court, onto the Wisconsin Supreme Court, only for the second time since 1967 that a challenger has defeated an incumbent, and she won by 136,000 votes. It's staggering. So go to BuzzFlash and see my piece on that. And then Mark Carlin, the editor-publisher, we're talking with. Mark, why aren't the Democrats having equal time and coming on after Trump's lies to counteract him?
Harvey, BuzzFlash has been around for about 20 years, and I founded it because I felt the Democrats were very poor at messaging. The Republicans are marketers. Trump's a marketer. He's a swindler, a con man, a marketer, a sociopath, and he is guilty, as my commentary points out, and I've said this before, of negligent manslaughter. These deaths, about 80, it's estimated that 80-90% of them wouldn't have happened if we had had early testing, case tracing, isolation, and surveillance. He now is saying to, I just received an email alert from the New York Times, to governors that they want to start allowing public gatherings before May 1st. That's fine with him. This is just murder. And I think that the Democrats, one, they find it hard to accept that anyone can be this evil. And Trump is evil. Yes, he does not care. And in fact, he, I think, found that with the coronavirus raging, he could take advantage of that and assert unitary authority, executive authority, it's called, become more authoritarian. He issued rulings today that allowed for more toxic pollution in the air. He's taken the umbrella of the coronavirus pandemic to no longer even allow asylum seekers to cross into the United States. He's, in essence, closed the southern border. And he's done several other things, including get a bailout for the Trump hotels in the $2 trillion piece of legislation among the three bills that have passed this far that have been called coronavirus relief. But most of the money is really relief for billionaires and millionaires. It's, you know, very small portion of it is going to people who have lost their jobs because of coronavirus. And the Democrats, to answer your question, Nancy Pelosi has a news conference every week in which she is very frank. She said, blood is on Trump's hands. The media simply doesn't regard the Speaker of the House as being on a level the President of the United States. I personally think it's journalistic malpractice to be broadcasting what are clearly propaganda campaign events, because he had to cancel his campaign events. And not only that, the disinformation that Trump provides with various endorsements almost daily and for long periods of time in any given daily Trump show of anti-malarial drugs that can kill people, I think that the journalism world needs to reevaluate whether or not they are enabling, in essence, a sociopath, just as some people enable an alcoholic. And I think they are. And I wish that they had a stronger voice. Adam Schiff is a very effective speaker, but the press simply doesn't regard them as equal to a president speaking from the White House.
Well, this has to stop. I mean, the Democrats have to step up, and after every press conference, they have to make a statement. Mark Carlin, I'm going to have a piece for you Monday morning on what people can do. BuzzFlash is a great website. We thank you for keeping it going. We know it's a great personal sacrifice, and I hope that you'll continue coming on the show. Your piece, as we leave, I want to ask you one question. If Donald Trump, if the White House, if the federal government had made the proper response to this Trump virus pandemic, how many people, what percentage of the people who have died could have been saved?
I have heard, it's all speculation, but I have heard tossed around more than once the figure that 80 to 90% could have been saved. And you would have also been talking about an 89 to 90% reduction in infections.
Okay, Mark Carlin, editor publisher of Buzzflash. We may have you on next week if you're willing. Look forward to my piece Monday morning. And now, please, folks, go to buzzflash.com, look at Mark's piece on the psychopath in the White House, and see my piece on the great victory in Wisconsin. We're going to now segue over. Thank you, Mark. We're going to segue over now and talk about And we're going to talk about the catastrophic impact of the virus on the nuclear power industry. I have seen zero media on this anywhere, but we know that the nuclear power workforce is being decimated. We have Eric Epstein from Three Mile Island Alert. Are you with us, Eric? Good. Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, are you with us? Kevin?
Hi, Harvey. I'm here. Thank you.
Good, good. Tim Judson, you with us from Nuclear Information Resource Service?
I sure am, Harvey. Thanks for having me.
And Jessica, did Jessica join us? Jessica Azoulay? Okay, I guess Jessica has not been able to join us. Let's start with you, Eric Epstein. If Jessica comes in, please let us know. Eric, you are in the belly of the beast there in central Pennsylvania, where I came in 1980 to interview people, and where the biggest lie in U.S. industrial history has been told, which is the idea that no one was harmed by radiation at Three Mile Island, which, of course, is an incredible lie and which can't even begin to be justified because nobody knows how much radiation was, in fact, released at Three Mile Island or where it went or who it affected. Eric Epstein, you want to tell us what's going on with the nuclear industry and what's happening in central Pennsylvania with atomic radiation? And if you're following it, tell us about what's going on at Limerick, a bit east of you, where apparently the workforce is being devastated by the Trump virus.
Well, thanks for having me, Harvey. We're in Harrisburg, so Three Mile Island Unit 1 recently shut in September. We're trying to transition to decommissioning, and it's difficult to get a read on what's happening. At Unit 2, we just intervened in a case, which you can see on our website. They're trying to flip the damage plan to a limited liability company that would be a horrible idea. But, you know, in terms of COVID-19, Limerick, is winding up with a refueling outage. It's been a disaster. Montgomery County is a collar county outside of Philly, and it's ground zero for the epidemic in Pennsylvania. The plant, Limerick, is owned by Exelon, and they've really had a very lax protocol in place. Unfortunately, the governor and the secretary of the Department of Health did not intervene, working with Senator Muth. And hopefully some others so that we can learn some lessons from this incident. You know, among other things, as everything was relaxed during the virus and there were worker exemptions, you know, a lot of the workers were forced to report. You're either risk being terminated or forced to use their sick and vacation time. At Monco County, which is fairly suburban area, a lot of the workers, and there were 1,400 workers, we're staying at Airbnbs, Campground of America, motels, and simply weren't able to track them. So as we finish up there, those folks are likely to move north to New York. Out in the western part of the state, Beaver Valley is being operated by a company that just came out of bankruptcy, and we're having similar refueling problems with them. The new company is Energy Harbor. It used to be First Energy. And then up north in the coal region, Susquehanna is operated by Talon, and that's actually a private equity firm. So we have three plants in Pennsylvania going through refueling. All three are owned by separate companies, and the protocols are just really poor. So we're going to pen a letter in the next couple of days, send it to the governor, because we have another refueling outage coming up in the fall at Peach Bottom. But to get back to Three Mile Island, it's an accident without an end. The company coming in is a fictional company based in Delaware, organized in Utah, and it's basically coming in to do a quick, dirty cleanup and then leave town. So Fortunately, the Department of Environmental Protection is going to litigate that. That being said, we still have complaints at Three Mile Island about virus issues because they are beginning decommissioning, and that's another plant owned by Exelon. So thus far, Harvey, I really don't have anything good or positive to report other than, we're coming out of the refueling outages. As Tim and Kevin know, there's been a whole bunch of exemptions. Workers are not happy. The unions are not happy. And, we're trying to make some sense out of this. I noticed today, and maybe Tim or Kevin can talk to it, that I think there was a ton of workers, I think 1,400 laid off at Vogtle down in Georgia. So I guess it depends on the plant, the state, and the operator, whether or not these folks are going to take it seriously. But we do believe we have an obligation because a lot of these workers from Limerick are going to move into New York, likely. Tim can probably talk about that. And then the Beaver Valley folks will probably move to Ohio. So it's an ongoing dilemma, and we've just been stunned, really, by the lack of media or political awareness. So we'll continue to grind it out. You can always visit our website, and we'll see our litigation is posted there. But it's been a very exhausting month.
Well, as best I can tell, my article, which was at BuzzFlash on and elsewhere on the spread of the Trump virus, and I'm calling it the Trump virus, by the way, not the coronavirus, has rampaged through the nuclear industry, and there's been no media on it whatsoever. Tim Judson, you've been following this story. What can you tell us about what's happening? You were on the show recently to talk about it, and now you're back. What's happening with the spread of the virus through the nuclear power industry? And what's the impact? And then we'll get it from Kevin as well.
Well, I think the scary truth of the situation is that we don't really know what the status of infection within the nuclear industry is at this point. Eric mentioned the situation down at Plant Vogtle in Georgia, which is the only nuclear reactor construction site that's active in the U.S., but there's also two operating reactors there as well. At Plant Vogtle, there's 9,000 workers working on construction of two reactors, working, incredible shifts, and just like Eric described in Pennsylvania, staying at trailer parks and man camps and motels and whatnot, in small rural communities that don't have the medical infrastructure to handle a large outbreak. And over the last week and a half, the rates of infection reported at Plant Vogtle are doubling about every 3 days. Now, the problem is we don't know whether the current number of cases, which is up to, I believe, something around 50 as of yesterday, we don't know whether those are the current numbers as of the number of workers infected now, or whether those are just the positive test results that have been coming in that were probably tests that were taken over a week ago. So, in fact, at Plant Vogtle, there could be, well over 100 workers infected at this point, but we don't know it yet. And the same thing is true of reactor sites across the country.
God, it's an incredible nightmare. So my understanding is that they stopped construction on the two new reactors at Plant Vogtle. Is that right, Tim?
If they did, they must have taken that action today. As of the most recent reports I saw, they were still working on construction.
Oh, my God. And there's no systematic testing required within the nuclear industry. Is that right?
That's true. In fact, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which, of course, everyone assumes is broadly a safety, regulator of safety within the nuclear industry, has completely abdicated any responsibility for the health of workers during the pandemic, claiming that their jurisdiction is just radiological nuclear safety of the plants, and that they're not responsible for protecting the health of the workers. So essentially, and then no other federal agency has stepped in to try to protect workers at the plants. And in fact, it's probably really the fault of the NRC that the NRC hasn't alerted other agencies to the conditions that are prevailing within this industry. because the conditions of nuclear plants are just so unique compared to other industries. So essentially what you've had happen is, this pandemic spreading really rapidly, and the industry essentially wanting to basically ignore it and pressing forward with all of its regular operations. These refueling outages that, as Eric described, usually involve 1,000 to 2,000 temporary workers coming to reactor sites that are potentially already hotbeds of infection. Without having any testing protocols, they're not able to do the kind of social distancing that's required. A lot of the requirements for access for getting into the nuclear plants, such as going through scanners and bomb sniffers and those sort of things, are not set up in any way that corresponds to the kind of social distancing and sanitation protocols that are necessary to deal with this virus. And so, nuclear workers are being put directly at risk of infection in very large numbers in very small communities. And, the thing that we're noticing is that, in the spring and the fall, what most people don't realize is that, there's waves of reactors, sort of refueling in the spring and the fall of every year. And because they try to schedule them that way, because those are the months when electricity demand is low, and so they can afford to take reactors offline. And so you have reactors shutting down for a few weeks at a time, bringing in these large workforces, and these workforces basically rotate from plant to plant over the season. And so you've got the workers that were at Limerick who came there from other states who are working on other refueling outages. Now, Limerick has restarted. A lot of those workers have now gone to the Salem Unit 2 reactor in New Jersey, to Beaver Valley in Pennsylvania, potentially to New York or other states. And so there's this way in which, over the course of this season, these itinerant workers are going to be going from community to community without any testing. A lot of them, we're going to be asymptomatic, but yet spreading the virus. And so no one knows, sort of how this infection is going to spread. And again, these are small rural communities that don't have the medical infrastructure to handle a major outbreak of this virus.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Kevin Camps, you want to jump in on this? I want to mention one thing before we lose track. We are scheduled to see the Indian Point Reactor, Unit 1, shut this month. Kevin, you want to start with that?
Real quick, I just wanted to touch on Vogtle, and sure, I'll go on to Indian Point, but I'm sure Tim has a lot to say about that. Regarding Vogtle, I'm looking at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution headline, and it says, Georgia Power cuts nearly 2,000 Vogtle workers as coronavirus spreads. But that's only 20% of the workforce, like Tim was saying. So there's still at least three-quarters of the workforce is still on the job site down there. And, regarding Indian Point, a little good news. Tim actually confirmed for me the other day. I was concerned because the industry, of course, wants the country to think it's essential. And I remembered that there was a electricity emergency get-out-of-jail-free card at Indian Point Unit 2, where they could extend operations if there was a so-called electricity emergency. And Tim confirmed for me that they're not getting away with that. It's clear there's no such emergency. So it is ramping down towards permanent closure. A little bit of good news, a very hard won reactor shutdown. I did want to mention the Fermi Unit 2 because Michael Keegan's been keeping me up to date on the situation there. And sure enough, the virus is spreading even at the Fermi site, although Detroit Edison's being very coy. They're referring to it as a company spread. Well, the spread is at the Fermi nuclear power plant, maybe elsewhere in the company too, but they won't confirm that. So luckily, there's been some good coverage by Tom Henry and the Toledo Blade. And one thing I did want to address was, in addition to the spread of the coronavirus in the nuclear workforce itself and then spreading from there to the host communities, what are the impacts on nuclear safety? And that's also going on at NRC incredibly. They are granting the industry exemptions from inspections, from needed repairs and maintenance and even replacements of safety significant systems and structures and components without even quantifying what the increase in risk is. They're just granting most requests, if not all. Folks are trying to watchdog it. I know Tim and Eric and I have been on a number of these calls, but there's a growing number of these NRC meetings with industry where the rubber stamp machine is just going rapid fire. And so what does that mean? It's going to mean longer work hours. Instead of a limit of 72 work hours per week, it's going up to 86. Instead of 12 hours per day, it's going up to 16. This is for control room operators. This is for security guards. So the workers are not only stressed by the pandemic, maybe even sick from the pandemic, they're also very fatigued, and mistakes could be made. And when you're skipping inspections and repairs and replacements, anything could happen. They're trying to defer those for 2 years under the excuse of the pandemic without even quantifying what the risk increase is with that. And specifically at Fermi 2, just to conclude, the major repair that's needed is on the torus, which is a part of the pressure suppression system of the containment structure at this Fukushima twin design. There's paint on the inside of the torus that is chipping off, and if they ever need that cooling water in that large vessel, the paint chips could block the flow of the water on filters, and the water may never reach the core of the reactor. So this is a meltdown risk they're playing around with at Fermi. They have been neglecting it for a very long time, but incredibly, they were supposed to do the job, this refueling outage. They're not going to do it. NRC is going to let them get away with it. 2 more years of operations at least until they address this problem.
Boy, it's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Well,
and you
have an industry sensitive beyond all calculation, and the workforce is just being decimated. It's an old workforce. Nobody's been going into nuclear power operations in college for a generation, really. And these people are—you can't social distance in a control room. I mean, it's just not that big. You're required to have 5 people in there. I'm sure the NRC is going to start handing out exemptions to let them try and run these reactors by remote control. We all know how that's going to end. Eric Epstein, you got something to add here? I mean, this is just really terrifying to me.
Well, yeah, I just have 3 observations, because a lot of us who have been involved in this issue for a long time are aware of it. I don't know if the general public is that really, since we switched from the systematic assessment of licensee performance, the old report card, to the reactor oversight process, over the last 20, 25 years, the NRC has become a partner or a collaborator. And when you are on these calls, it's clear that it's choreographed, it's teed up, and in many cases, it's NEI, the industry that's basically leading these conference calls. And what makes it worse is that people I've known, or you've known, Harvey, or Tim or Kevin, you know, who had a conscience and wanted to do the right thing, and were pro-nuclear, and that's fine, aren't there anymore. You know, they've either been fired, or terminated, or just can't take it anymore. So there's virtually no oversight. You know, that's the first thing, you know, that I wanted to point out. The second thing that's appalling to me is that we have a really good governor and a very good Secretary of the Department of Health who have been bamboozled by Exelon and the industry. And, you know, on the one hand, they're saying this is a vital infrastructure industry. And on the other hand, you know, as I think Tim pointed out, you have the refueling outages when you do, because there's a natural decline. Most of our licensees are summer peaking licensees and winter peaking. So there's a natural decline. Everybody knows demand is down. And Pennsylvania is the second largest gas-producing state. So we have the NRC, which should probably be renamed Not Really Concerned. You have a gas-producing state that really doesn't need the nukes. And I guess the third thing that I need to point out, and the frustration is, not a lot of – the media is just not interested, Harvey. I mean, it's really hard to get coverage on this issue. And so for somebody like Rachel Levine, the Secretary of Health, or Governor Wolf, who has been really good and aggressive – at social distancing, they're totally blind to what's going on. And look, these workers are going to become coronavirus pots. They're going to go not only, as Tim, you know, was saying, from Limerick to maybe up north or over to the east of New Jersey, but they're going to continue to do this. And these guys can't afford not to work, and that's the problem. Exelon, First Energy, Talon are telling these people who are scared. They don't want to come to work. If you don't come to work, you'll be fired. They're not going to pay them hazardous pay. And then these folks, you know, one of the things that was being mentioned is they may be in rural areas, but there's not a lot of work in rural areas. So a lot of these people are coming from 4, 6, 8, 10 counties deep.
out in Beaver Valley, you're getting people coming from West Virginia and over from Ohio. So this is a story that needs to be told. I blame, you know, the downsizing in the media and the lack of any institutional memory in the media for not picking up on this. But I don't know about Tim or Harvey or Kevin. We've been hitting this hard. I mean, you know, we've been pleading our case hard. And our concerns are coming from the workers who are exhausted, who want the protections to be in place. They don't want to lose their job. They're being harassed. And, you know, the industry has prevailed. In fact, I don't know if anybody mentioned it. We actually had the Secretary of Energy intervene at LIMRIC. So you have this perverse dichotomy where, on the one hand, you have an agency saying, look, it's not our responsibility. And on the other hand, the state saying, well, it's not our responsibility because it's the federal government's responsibility. It's a very twisted, high-level nuclear shell game, and I think people should be disturbed.
Boy, it's terrifying. Tim Judson, you want to take a moment to celebrate the shutdown of Indian Point and then just give us some more information on this?
Sure. I mean, well, and what I'll say in preface to that is that, you know, even at Indian Point, where Unit 2 is, you know, is in the process of shutting down, the workers at Indian Point are reporting the same concerns as, you know, as at Limerick, that, you know, that they're terrified of the lack of infection protocols and sanitation equipment at Indian Point. And so I think that, you know, while, you know, I think we're really happy that Indian Point is shutting down, I think we can all be concerned about the, you know, about the plight of the workers who are continuing to have to operate that plant so it shuts down safely. But I think part of the good news, and this is something that's, I think, relevant in the bigger picture here, is that you know, there's been a big PR offensive, essentially, you know, funded by the nuclear and, you know, and natural gas industries in New York to try to spin the closure of Indian Point as some sort of a climate disaster. And, you know, and they're publishing op-eds and letters to the editor claiming that, you know, the closure of Indian Point is going to cause blackouts during a pandemic, and trying to spin a whole sort of, you know, sort of scaremongering narrative to try to sort of a desperate, you know, move to try to reverse the closure of Indian Point. And, you know, it's good that it's not going to happen. The state's intent on closing it. And the really good news is this past week is that an organization out of California called Physicians, Scientists, and Engineers for Healthy Energy published a report showing that, you know, that the growth of renewables and efficiency in New York is going to, you know, to more than replace Indian Point in the next few years. And that actually, you know, that Indian Point's actually opening up a big opportunity, for renewables to really start skyrocketing in the state.
Tim, would you forward me a link to that report so I can spread it around? My understanding
Absolutely.
Now, and reading Ken Bassong's stuff and others, is that nationwide, the United States, is now getting more electricity from solar than it is from nuclear. That we're up to about 21% on solar and under 20% for nuclear. Have you seen that, Kevin?
Yeah, I try to follow Ken's good news as close as I can, and he's been reporting similar progress, you know, for the past few years. And I remember back to, I think it was 2010, when this report came out of a university in North Carolina. It was called the Great Crossover. And what it was showing, you know, 10 years ago that new solar was cheaper than new nuclear. So this good news with renewables just keeps on rolling, despite the power of the nuclear lobby politically, economically, to try to fearmonger, like Tim was saying, in places like Ohio, where, you know, unfortunately we lost and a $1 billion bailout to keep Davis Bessey and Perry operating prevailed through all kinds of dirty tricks. But a part of the deception is the untapped potential, as you know so well, Harvey, of wind in Ohio. It has been effectively sabotaged by First Energy. The atom splitters and the coal burners have prevailed for the time being, and that tremendous wind power potential in Ohio goes untapped as the safety risks at Davis-Bessey, particularly, just go through the roof. And they, as far as I know, they are done with their refueling outage, and they are back to operating for another couple years. And I'm not sure the details of what they got away with, but, you know, for one thing, steam generator tube inspections are being exempted by NRC. And that's a critical issue at Davis-Bessey. I don't know if they got that exemption or not for sure, but just 5 years ago, they replaced the steam generators at Davis-Bessey. That should be good news. The new one should be safer than the old ones. Well, we saw at San Onofre back in 2012 that that ain't necessarily the case when they're trying to squeeze as much juice and money out of those steam generators as they can. And sure enough, that's exactly what they did at Davis-Bessey. They did not do a like-for-like replacement. They did a replacement to try to maximize electricity production by packing more tubes closer together, running hotter, and that's what happened at San Onofre and led to a tube burst, and luckily it didn't cascade because that is another pathway to meltdown.
God, it's terrifying, and I have to say that, you know, I had an experience. I was in the wind business for a while, and I went up to Northern Ohio basically as a traveling salesman, and I talked to a whole bunch of farmers, and they're all ecstatic at the possibility of bringing in windmills that had flat land, they had good steady wind, they had plenty of transmission, which is an issue in other parts of the country. They were close to the urban areas that were going to use the electricity. It was you could not manufacture a better situation for bringing in wind power than in Northern Ohio along the North Coast. And just about, you know, 20, 30 miles down. And the powers that be stepped in and completely squashed what could have been a $4 or $5 billion business. I mean, completely shut out the wind industry from Northern Ohio when it could have completely transformed the Ohio economy. Tens of thousands of jobs, incredible prosperity, and the nuclear industry and the fossil fuel burners just came in and crushed it. It's astonishing to see what happened in Northern Ohio. Eric Epstein, have you had similar situations in Pennsylvania with the wind industry?
It's a little more difficult here. You know, when we came out of deregulation, we put together four sustainable energy funds. I was involved in one in the East. Solar does have market share. But, you know, there's a lot of pushback now. You know, a couple of things have happened. Coal has been devastated, both anthracite and bituminous. And gas is, through Marcellus shale fracking, has emerged as the dominant energy player here. So Pennsylvania, it's kind of interesting. You know, although, you know, we have joined REGI, it hasn't been approved by the legislature. And Pennsylvania exports about 30% of its energy, mostly to New York, Maryland, and New Jersey. So we have a long way to go with solar, but the solar lobby is very effective. We do have an alternative energy portfolio, and that's good. You know, I've been involved with the construction of a number of wind farms. We did some really cool projects that were high visible. One is actually on the turnpike near Somerset. And that was a very interesting project because we actually cannibalized Enron and took some of their windmills, put them on a wind farm. And as you're driving down the turnpike, you can actually check them out. And we did some wind farms up in the coal region. We reclaimed some of that land. So we have a long way to go. And as you're probably aware, we won the bailout battle. PMI is shut down. Although Beaver Valley says it's hanging around, I think Beaver Valley is probably going to go away in a couple years. So, you know, it's half one way, half a dozen the other. You know, we defeated the bailout. A lot of energy went into that. Now people want to take out the portfolio. We still have the portfolio in play. We've got a lot of work to do. But, you know, I'm pretty confident. This is an interesting state. It's not a traditional eastern state. I mean, Pennsylvania is Philly and Pittsburgh with Alabama in the middle. It's more socially conservative state. You know, both houses, the House and the Senate are controlled by ours, and gas is dominate.
And you know, I'll be honest with you, Stephen Keith, that we allied with gas to defeat nukes, but, you know, we also are battling gas. So a lot
my of understanding, my understanding, Eric Epstein from Harrisburg, is that the virus, the Trump virus, has had a devastating impact on the fracking industry.
Yeah.
Is that the case? What has the virus, the pandemic done to the fracking industry?
You know, I can't really speak to that, and it's a really good point because fracking, and what I was going to say, you actually anticipated my next comment. Fracking has been the predominant environmental issue in the state, and which is usually fought out over water use. And it happens normally in rural areas. I don't know. My assumption is, like everything else, it's stalled. The Senate just tried to overrun the governor's legislation yesterday to open things up. I can't imagine that fracking is anything but delayed. I mean, unless they got an exemption, and Pennsylvania is a crazy state. You know, you can make chocolate during the crisis, but kids aren't going to school. So, it's interesting. I would have to say that any new fracking is probably, postponed. But to be honest with you, Harvey, the big issue right now is although, and fracking is a big one, bigger than that is the construction of the transmission lines across the state. And so, you know, whether it's transmission lines, transportation infrastructure, everything's on hold. Everybody's taking a haircut right now.
Wow. Except you can't go get a haircut. I mean, I am. That's a different story. Tim Jensen,
yeah.
You talked about the wave of renewables to replace Indian Point. When is Indian Point 3 going to shut down, the last one?
Yeah, in 12 months from now. I mean, basically what they did when they negotiated the closure settlement a few years ago was that they set the closures for each reactor at the end of their refueling outages or their fuel cycle. So, you know, Indian Point 2 is shutting down now instead of refueling, and Indian Point 3 is going to be shutting down a year from now on by the same schedule.
But the four reactors in upstate New York that Andrew Cuomo has bailed out, they must be having COVID issues as well. Is anybody talking about the spread of the Trump virus through the four reactors upstate?
Well, you know, like Eric described in Pennsylvania, it's been hard to get much media interest in the story. I mean, we know what's happening. There's, you know, in three of those reactors are in Oswego County, which is, a rural county on the shore of Lake Ontario north of Syracuse. And, Nine Mile Point 2 was shut down for refueling last month. It restarted about a week and a half ago. Then the Ginna reactor 50 miles down the road shut down last week for refueling. So we know that those workers are going from reactor to reactor doing these refuelings. You know, there's been COVID infection cases reported in Oswego County. We don't know that there's any kind of meaningful testing going on at the plant. And the media is not taking much of an interest. So in some ways, you know, there's a real concern that, you know, that there's a vector for transmission of the coronavirus in these rural reactor communities that's just not being monitored closely enough.
It's a total blackout. I mean, it's astounding. All this coverage of this epidemic pandemic caused and supported by the Trump White House, and I have yet to see a single news article about the impact outside of Limerick County. I have to say that locally in Limerick, in the county in Limerick, I guess it's Montgomery County, where the Limerick nuclear plant is, there was some local opposition. Kevin Camps, have you followed that, and have you seen any coverage anywhere of the effect of the pandemic on the nuclear industry?
Well, the only coverage I've seen has been Tom Henry in the Toledo Blade on Fermi Unit 2. There was a good article that quoted Michael Keegan. And now this Atlanta Journal-Constitution on the Vogtle construction site. But I can't remember any other nuclear power-related coverage. I have seen some coverage on the nuclear weapons complex side of things because Beyond Nuclear is a member of the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. So I get those send-outs on the listserv. for ANA. And sure enough, I mean, the coronavirus spread is happening in the weapons complex facilities as well. So Savannah River site, Tom Clements with SRS Watch is keeping an eye on everything down there. Nuke Watch New Mexico on Los Alamos and other sites. And it's growing. The infection rate is growing at those sites. Tom keeps asking the question, what critical missions do you keep bragging about in your press releases, DOE? Are you still performing? And of course, it's the nuclear weapons development work. And yeah, so he's raising elephant in the room. How is that critical during a time of pandemic? But that's DOE's bread and butter. That's what they do.
Okay, so you've heard it first here. This is the Green Power and Wellness Show, and this is the first and only coverage we're hearing anywhere outside of Montgomery County. They did have a, you know, the local officials did confront Exelon, and Exelon basically told them to drop dead. So, folks, listen to this carefully. The nuclear power industry is being devastated by the pandemic. The workforce, which is already old and very limited, there are no young people really coming into the nuclear power operations or repair field, is diminishing. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is allowing plant workers to operate commercial reactors working 16-hour days, 85-hour weeks. I mean, this is absolutely insane. It is an accident. It's not even an accident. It's a catastrophe in progress, and something bad, God forbid, is increasingly likely to happen. I mean, this is a national crisis that absolutely is not being discussed anywhere except this radio show. Eric Epstein, do you want to tell people how to get a hold of you, please? We're almost out.
Yeah, you can just go to our website. You know, just put Three Mile Island Alert into your Google, your search engine. And, you know, I would just comment on the media coverage. You know, one of the problems is that, you know, you have somebody that's really good like Tom Henry out in Ohio who's got a lot of experience. But a lot of folks that we used to work with are no longer around. And we got lucky. You know, the Pottsville Mercury in Montgomery County is covering everything. But the old Patriot News, which is 10 Live, we've given them all the information, called them, and they haven't reported squat. So, you know, it's important to get a hold of us, Three Mile Island Alert. And on that website, you can contact me, and we respond to you within 24 hours. But we'll continue to press on refueling outages and then get ready for the next outage in the fall down at Peach. And, you know, and I'd encourage people to look at what's happening with Unit 2. The plant's not cleaned up, still highly radioactive, and we're looking at a very scary proposition of a limited liability company, which is essentially a real estate vehicle, taking the money and doing a quick and dirty cleanup. So, A lot going on here. So, folks, stay tuned. And, Harvey, thanks for giving us the opportunity to share.
Wonderful. It's an honor to have you. Tim Judson, how do people get a hold of you and say another whoop-de-doo for the shutdown of Indian Point here?
Sure. Yeah, people can reach us at www.nirs.org.
Tim Judson, you're at NIRS, N-I-R-S. People can get a hold of you at NIRS.org. And Kevin Camps at beyondnuclear.org. Sorry, we ran out of time. We'll have you back. Another terrifying show with these great activists at Green Power and Wellness Show. We will see you next week in Solar Talk.